This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run with Lynn Shanning and Noel. Now, we saw another by-election take place over the weekend, this time in Kimanis in Sabah. And UMNO's Mohamed Al-Amin prevailed over the Warisan candidate, Dato' Karim Bujang. So he won with a margin of just over 2,000 votes. Over 23,000 votes were cast on Saturday, making a turnout of just about 80%.
I know a lot of people are saying this really looks bad for Pakatan Harapan, but I'm just looking at the results, right? So this time is about 2,000 votes. Majority. But if you look at 2004, 2008 and 2013, the election showed that the majority was about 5,000. So you could say actually Pakatan reduced the majority. But I think they lost still despite promises of infrastructure upgrade. And maybe there was just too much of Shafi Abdal and not enough of Tun Mahathir, you know, federal leaders, unlike the UMNO side where they had, you know, the full force of all the main leaders.
I think Muhyiddin Yassin did turn up, though, to explain about the temporary Sabah pass to the voters. But obviously, that wasn't enough convincing.
Yeah, and that temporary pass, or the PSS, has been quite a flashpoint as well in Sabah. But for more on the result of the by-election, this morning we have on the line with us Ibrahim Sufyan, Programme Director at the Merdeka Centre. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Ben. So what are your reactions to the outcome of the Kimanis by-election? Was it as you expected?
Well, I'm a bit surprised in terms of the outcome because I had originally thought that Warisan, despite the challenges it faces, you know, would somehow prevail, you know, in a small marginal way in the seat. We did, however, you know, carry out a small survey among the voters there, and the results we found, you know, were somewhat similar to how it turned out in the sense that, you know, Barisan Nasional still has a very strong sway amongst voters in Kimanis, not just amongst the Malay Muslim Bumiputra, but also amongst the other ethnic groups there. And perhaps I think what was a bit surprising is that Chief Minister Shafi Abdal's, you know, star power, you know, doesn't appear to extend far beyond into the reaches in Kimanis, in the sense that, you know, we had thought that, you know, Sabah has always been an area where big personalities carry a lot of weight in politics. But I think that was not the case in Kimanis.
Well, a key issue in this election seemed to be the Sabah temporary pass. How much of this do you think played in securing UMNO's win this time round?
Well, you know, this is an interesting issue because the PSS, the temporary pass topic, you know, it's something that's done actually to address the irregularities and the problems of the past, in the sense that there are so many undocumented people in Sabah, and this is an attempt to document them and then begin developing a strategy to either naturalize them as citizens or repatriate them back to their countries of origin. But however, you know, there is a lot of suspicion amongst the population towards this scheme, in the sense that many people, I think, believe that this is a gateway towards gaining citizenship. In the past, we've noticed that when it comes to stories of immigration and, you know, providing citizenship, you know, Project IC, normally it's the Kadazan, Dusun, Murut ethnic group that harbour the strongest dissatisfaction over this thing. But what we noticed is that in Kimanis, even the Bumiputra Muslim population feels strongly about this, and I think it played out very strongly in the election.
And our Economic Affairs Minister, Azmin Ali, expressed the opinion that Warisan lost in part because it's a rural constituency and Pakatan Harapan needs to be doing more to convince rural voters of its efforts to narrow this urban-rural gap. Was this a factor in your view?
Yes, I mean, it is a factor. In many of the constituencies in the country where rural voters predominate, the issue of development, the issue of providing for the livelihoods of the people, as well as providing financial aid, that ranks foremost in terms of what voters expect from people in government. And I think in this case, you know, Warisan, by fielding the five-time candidate, you know, perhaps I think overstretched the trust of the voters, partly because perhaps there's association amongst the people there that the, you know, standing candidate, you know, has not been able to fulfill many of their needs, and that, you know, by fielding him again, they're not providing a fresh change to someone that they can place trust. So that, I think, is one aspect. Number two, the Warisan government has only been in power for a couple of years, and it may take time before that state government, along with the initiatives taken by the federal government, to bear fruit amongst people in rural areas, particularly in Sabah.
Now, Ben, Sabah UMNO chief Dato' Shibung Mokhtar Radin has also suggested that the Kimanis win is the start of the party's revival in the state. But looking at the bigger picture, would you read UMNO's victory in Kimanis as part of a pendulum swing back towards BN, or is it more of an isolated incident?
Well, I think, you know, I think at two levels here, there's an argument that can be made for Bung Mokhtar Radin's case, in the sense that at the superficial level, yes, many BN leaders in the state had defected to Warisan or Pakatan Harapan. But I think the grassroots of those parties, the parties have basically stayed with their respective organizations, and though they have not come across. And I think this has panned out in Kimanis, in the sense that the grassroots network of UMNO and the other Barisan National parties that are associated with them has remained very strong, and that while that of the Pakatan Harapan along with Warisan, which are relatively newcomers to the political arena, is thin and I think struggling to reach out to voters. At the second level, at the national level, we also notice that there is a voter backlash against Pakatan Harapan, dissatisfied over, you know, unfulfilled promises and the generally very stagnant economic situation that they are experiencing. And this vote, again, you know, is in part a protest vote, a wake-up call again for Pakatan Harapan to actually hasten the delivery of its reforms, because I think voters have already lost patience to them.
So, Ben, after this defeat, what's next for Pakatan? What do you think they're going to do?
Well, I think Pakatan really needs to go to the drawing board and, you know, address the fundamental problems that they have in the sense of public delivery and the policy reform initiatives that they have outlined. More critically is that the coalition's policy on economic revival, that shared prosperity vision 2030, really needs to be fleshed out, and people really need to see tangible examples of it being in action, that it really can address lingering issues about inequality, government efficiency, and preparedness towards facing a more uncertain globalized economic future. That's one. Number two, it also needs to look at how it's going to strengthen its party base, because, like I've said before, you know, Pakatan rests on a very narrow base amongst the Bumiputra voters. And what we've seen in Tanjung Piai and also Kimanis is that even the non-Bumiputra voters have started to vote with their feet. And so if it doesn't watch out, if it doesn't address the political calculations, it's going to find themselves in serious trouble come GE15.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Ben. And that was Ben Sufian of the Merdeka Centre giving us his thoughts on the Kimanis by-election. Now, we've also been running a poll on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you what does the loss in the Kimanis by-election mean for Pakatan Harapan? Now, we've had 110 votes and 50% voted for the option of faith in Pakatan Harapan waning. Votes for other options were fairly evenly split. 22% said clear succession plan, 15% said nothing, it's a state issue, whereas 13% said BN resurgence. So I tend to think that it's also a faith issue, because even as Ben said, it's there are elements to a protest vote here.
Yeah, so I think there are just two elements. One is the very local issue about Sabah temporary pass. I think, race and religious issues can be very persuasive. I mean, they have a very persuasive narrative. Although it was meant to regulate foreign workers properly, but I think it's triggered a lot of suspicions and maybe a lot of fake information out there. But on a federal level, the bigger picture here really is, I think, you know, they have another, 2 to 3 years to govern Pakatan Harapan. So I think they really have to stop internal party bickering, for example, you know, speed up on institutional reforms and certainly on education and rural development.
But what I noticed was quite interesting is Anwar's reaction versus Tun M's reaction after they lost. So Anwar said, you know, you need to listen to the people, you need to address their concerns. And then Tun M says it's because the people in Kimanis don't realise the good that the current government has done. Quite different kind of comments, right, post the results.
I know. Well, I mean, the cynical part of me says that it's easy for Dato' Sri Anwar to be saying these things, considering he's nowhere near a cabinet position at this point.
So not yet.
Not yet.
Akan
not
datang,
ever.
Right? Supposed to be.
Yeah. So you know, when you are an outsider looking in, it's much easier to make these kinds of comments. That said, you know, Tun Mahathir's comments are also a little bit questionable, because if the people in Kimanis don't understand what it is that Pakatan Harapan's been doing, then maybe the fault lies with Pakatan Harapan for not communicating it properly to the people on the ground, or perhaps they're not seeing the result, the on-the-ground result of the reforms that you are trying to push through. So at the end of the day, you know, you can't really blame them either, right?
No, but what's very important, as Ben points out, is that, you know, this whole thing about our economy and this policy that you've rolled out, Shared Prosperity 2030, there doesn't seem to be clear messaging. People don't see the buy-in for them. What are the benefits of this? Until that is done, you know, there'll be a lot of question marks.
I think very much so, a lot of question marks indeed as we come out of that Kimanis by-election. But right now we are about to head into the 8 o'clock news. Don't go anywhere though, because after that we're having the breakfast grill where Shaoning speaks with Tony Lombardo, CEO of Lendlease Asia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.